The audible of the best in Bitcoin. This is the Cryptoconomy. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Cryptoconomy with Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We are jumping. This is going to be a really short read. But it's just a really fun idea that I want to make sure everyone has heard. I have used it a couple of times since I saw this Twitter thread, but this is a year old now, a little bit over. But it's just a really fun idea. It's by Udi Wertheimer, and I'm sure everybody knows Udi. But if you're not following him, a lot of ETH-hating gold comes from Udi. But this is just a really good thread. It's like six tweets, I think. Yeah, just six. So we're just gonna go ahead and jump right into it, and then I kind of want to talk about this idea because it's fascinating to me. Reminder: the blockchain is the undesirable waste that is produced during the useful process of transferring bitcoins. A thread. It never ceases to amaze me how we continue to promote the positive, almost magical uses of the word blockchain, while virtually all experienced professionals agree that a blockchain is something to avoid. It's time to refresh the terms we use. Here are some ideas. Saying something is on the blockchain, quote-unquote, i.e. your funds are secured on the blockchain, makes no sense. Having something on a block in a chain is almost never what you desire. What you want is for people to agree that global state changed. Funds are yours by consensus. For similar reasons, on-chain and off-chain are terms that put emphasis on hardly relevant technical details. Better options, polluting transactions, produce more chain and more waste, and clean transactions, do not create more global waste. Saying, quote, the Bitcoin blockchain and the Ethereum blockchain is also counterintuitive, unless you're specifically referring to the undesirable waste that's produced when transferring Bitcoins or running the EVM. Consider the Bitcoin network instead. Using the terms correctly can reduce confusion and help everyone focus on our common goal, minimizing our global chain footprint to ensure the continued health of the Bitcoin asset. Told you that one was short. It's only 280 characters a tweet, so undoubtedly we'd get through six of them pretty quick. Now, I don't think this is a perfect analogy, and I want to read a couple of responses to it just to kind of give the other side of where it might be missing part of the story, but I think this is an incredibly valuable framing. And even though I can't come up with a good analogy because I think the blockchain is really kind of unique among things. And I think both what Eric Wall responded as well as what Minnie Rosenfeld responded are relevant to it, but neither actually catch the full story because I think inherently trying to create a perfect analogy for this is really, really difficult. But this is what Eric Wall responded. Says, isn't this true for everything? Airplanes are toxic waste. What we want is teleportation. Pencils are toxic waste. What we want is to store information. Phones are toxic waste. What we want to do is communicate. Houses are toxic waste. What we want is protection or heat. And Charlie Bullitt responds, yes, but doesn't that just underline the point? In all of the examples you mentioned, the discussion is almost entirely focused on effectivizing and minimizing footprint, seeing the footprint as a bug and not a feature. This does not seem to be the case for blockchain. And he's meaning in the context of the word, like this doesn't seem to be the case for the word, the blockchain. Like nobody glorifies or talks about how great it is to have a bigger pencil as if you could write more effectively if your pencil was huge as opposed to being able to hold it in your hand. Now there's another short thread in this that really kind of got lost in the mix. In fact, after I read it, I went back to the original post and no joke, it took me like 20 minutes to find it again. because it's a response to a response down in a string of responses, so it all gets collapsed. And I could not find it for the life of me. But it's Minnie Rosenfeld, and this is one about how Bitcoin is actually an infrastructure. But let me go ahead and just read that as well. A blockchain is more akin to an infrastructure, like a power grid, roads, phone lines, than a product like a pin. You can't sell me a road. I can use a road to drive with my car, and I can't drive my car without the road. Roads are not a waste byproduct. Neither is a blockchain. You're too hung up on the fact that a blockchain is mostly historical records. That's a specific technical aspect of how the blockchain does what it does. That doesn't mean the proper analogies are things which are also historical records. That's not the essence of it. The essence is that a blockchain consumes resources and provides utility, and we should seek to maximize utility while minimizing resource requirements. Roads are a proper analogy. We want to maximize transportation while minimizing footprint. The technical features are different. They have different goals and methods. Roads aren't digital records. They're made up of concrete and have lanes painted on them, etc. If you're going to suggest we don't need a blockchain to use Bitcoin, I think you should write a white paper of your own, because a blockchain certainly is needed for what Satoshi proposed, just like roads are needed to drive cars. I renew my objection to this pointless assertion that a blockchain is a waste byproduct. It's an infrastructure required for Bitcoin and other things to function. Now, there is certainly an element of truth to this thread as well, but I still think it's missing something. I don't think explicitly calling it infrastructure really kind of gets to the heart of it, because the infrastructure itself is not an input in the making of the car, but the consensus and security that we get from a blockchain, that we get from the Bitcoin system to use the Bitcoin tool, as Udi was saying, is very much dependent on how easily we can make sense of that infrastructure, how easily we can process that entire blockchain, whatever that is. And that's why I think, again, the road analogy, and I can't think of any analogy that really encompasses the relationship between the blockchain and the Bitcoin tool itself. The blockchain does enable the tool to be used, but it is also an exhaust. It is also a byproduct of the system, and it is an undesirable byproduct. We want it to be as small as possible. Why? Because we then have to process all of that byproduct in order to continue using the tool with the same amount of security and the same amount of reliability. So I want to dig a little bit more into this, but we finished all the things that I think I want to read. So with that, let's go ahead and hit our sponsor, and then I'll share a little bit more thoughts on this and maybe give a better analogy, or at least just kind of hit the main points that I think are really important to take away from this discussion. All right, so I actually totally lied. I forgot there was actually another one that I wanted to hit, just because it kind of gets at the heart of what Udi was trying to get at without relying too deeply on the exhaust or the toxic waste sort of metaphor. But it's actually a comment by Adam Back. So a response from someone, Timon. I don't think all experienced professionals agree blockchain is something to avoid. Is liquid the waste of Bitcoin? I don't think so. And Adam Back responded, I think he means that the blockchain data structure itself is an artifact and will improve over time, maybe radically. The ideal bearer, fungible, sensor-resistant, unseizable, unfreezable, and survivable electronic money or value store is the thing to focus on. E.g., swap it out as better crypto, ZKP, trapdoor-free accumulators, etc., make this robustly possible, and migrate to the new blockchain structure by importing Bitcoin's UTXO set. I'd say the benchmark closer to mature is when Satoshi can move early coins without being observed. All right, so what all are we trying to get at here? What does the combination of all of this tell us? What can we discern useful from this? First is that the bigger the blockchain is, the higher the cost or the higher the resource input is needed to produce the utility that Bitcoin provides, the security, the reliability, and the independent ownership. The higher that cost is, the fewer can verify it, which means it's a direct threat, or at least it's an indirectly proportional relationship to the very assurances that Bitcoin provides. The security and the usefulness of the tool is dependent on how much waste we produce with it. It's dependent on the output. And that's why I said earlier that there's actually kind of a fun analogy, even though it doesn't quite fit. There's still a lot left wanting in this analogy, but the idea of a pencil, and that a much smaller pencil is not necessarily worse or better, and a much bigger pencil is not necessarily worse or better. It's that there is a certain size of pencil which is best for the typical human. And if there was some sort of consensus mechanism or something that forced us all to use the same size pencil, the number two pencil, like, that's a very general consensus driven size of a pencil. Even a pen, like everything that you would get as a writing utensil is almost universally that same basic size. And you don't have, your writing isn't better, it's not more accurate or less accurate just because your pencil is bigger or because it's really, really small. There is a sort of equilibrium where it provides the best utility. But there is no ongoing cost to the pencil. And that's sort of the problem here. And it's where the analogy breaks down, is that there is an ongoing resource cost, and the very output of the process is a requirement for the input. So think of it like an assembly line or like a manufacturing process. There's this big machine and a bunch of people who have to essentially sort through all of the ingredients of this product. And at the end, there is the ultimate product and then some amount of waste that is necessary to produce the product. Except that the waste now gets put back at the beginning of this assembly line process. Now all of the people who are sorting and the machine that has to process all of this, all the recipe of the eventual product, of the ownership and exchange of Bitcoins, everything left over, all of the waste, needs to then be shoved back through the machine with all the rest of the stuff. So the more waste there is, the more there is to sort through, the more there is to try to cram and fit through this machine to produce the exact same product. And that product is Bitcoins. It's the value and the security that is dependent upon the ability for everyone to agree on what the current state of ownership is. So the database itself, the blockchain, is in fact the arbiter of the final state that everyone can agree on. So it's like a map for everyone to find the ultimate destination and find the product. But the very usefulness of that product, of that destination, is dependent. It's proportional to how easy it is to deal with the map, to deal with the blockchain. So if the blockchain is huge, it poisons the very value that it produces. If the blockchain is small and manageable, its security is far greater and its consensus is easier to defend. So the key point that Udi is trying to make here is that the blockchain is not some magical item that we should boast about. It's something that we actually want less of, if at all possible. And as Adam Back says, hopefully there will be technology and improvements that come in the future, even if it requires a consensus-breaking fork. If it's good enough, if it changes the game well enough with the security assurances, with incredibly high security assurances, well, then there may need to be some something put in place to move to that, because the blockchain is in fact a liability. Oh, wait, there's actually a tweet here. Hold on a second. Who is it? Justin Moon. Justin Moon said, "It is a liability that we tolerate, not a virtue that we extol." And that's why I think, despite the fact that the calling it a toxic waste or just undesirable waste is not perfectly accurate, but it is in fact, it does switch the framing properly from, ooh, Bitcoin is magic, blockchain is magic, or it's this useful tool that we're going to apply to bananas and cure cancer with and all of this nonsense. And it sets the framing right to express that it's a liability. It's something that we have to put up with to get the ultimate end goal of a secure, consensus-driven set of the final owners of who owns and secures individual balances of Bitcoin. It's the map that leads everyone to the same truth as to who owns all of the value within the system. And even though the analogy isn't perfect, I think it's useful because it really puts a very important framing in contest to the normal blockchain mania bullshit. The problem with blockchain is that the aspects of it, the features or the characteristics, like the elements that go into the blockchain and the protocol system, the actual network of the thing, are that actually make it a brilliantly useful or practical technology, are basically invisible. You know, normally if I've got a competing product, like if I design a new car or whatever, and I say, oh, it goes faster, or oh, it pulls more weight, you know, et cetera, et cetera, my car is better, I can basically set it up against the normal car or someone else's, and we could just basically prove it. It's just like, okay, yeah, this one is better. But the elements of a blockchain, the elements of Bitcoin that make it powerful, that make it fundamentally different from its competitors, are not visible. It's not a direct, I can just point at it and show you that my car has more pistons or it's a bigger engine or something. And you can't do that with a blockchain. In fact, someone can copy the Bitcoin code and make something that really, from a practical sense, from a purely visibility sense, looks perfectly identical to the other one. But all of the important elements, it's very much like Parker Lewis's article, and kind of the commentary I went into, the guy's take that we did after that, was that Bitcoin cannot be copied. That's in the Unchained Capital, it's on the Unchained Capital blog, but it's in the Gradually Then Suddenly series by Parker Lewis. Just best articles out there if you guys haven't listened to them. But it's basically the argument is that the process of decentralization and security is a process of maturation. And so basically Bitcoin's security and immutability is something that has been earned over years. And it's specifically been nurtured in a very critical environment. Like, it's only as Bitcoin continues to stand up against adversaries, as it continues to be tested and proven immutable or proven secure in the face of greater and greater challenges, does it then become decentralized and immutable. In the first year, when there were just three nodes and a couple of miners and Satoshi basically ran the thing, it was incredibly centralized. It had the same recipe to be decentralized at some point in the future, but it was not at the time. So the analogy that I used afterward is it's like having the DNA of a human being, but saying that a baby just out of the womb is as capable and as productive as a fully grown man. Obviously, that's ridiculous, but it's very easy to see the difference. We don't get that benefit with blockchain. We don't get that with this technology. So it leads to such amazing misunderstandings of people just claiming, oh, blockchain this and blockchain that. Blockchain's going to solve all of our healthcare problems. And because there's no way to measure There's no way to make an explicit comparison to the elements of the system that really make it secure, that really make its immutability, that prove its maturity and its resilience in the face of an adversary. All of those attributes that that demonstrate this are qualitative. They're not directly measurable. The only way to actually see them is to have a very deep understanding of how the system actually works, which sucks because it ends up being a huge barrier to Bitcoin, and it's why most of the people in Bitcoin are always going to use it as a speculative asset until it's so ubiquitous that people just trust it inherently. But and while the number of people who do understand Bitcoin will continue to grow, particularly as Bitcoin continues to spread and its gravity continues to pull people in, but the vast majority of people will use it just like they use the internet. They have no idea why or how it works, but it became ubiquitous because it proved itself to the right people and proved to be continually trustworthy and continually immutable as a totem across social barriers, to be that monetary instrument that no other money, to bridge the gaps that no other money could actually do, to socially scale, the social scaling a concept there. Money, Blockchains, and Social Scalability by Nick Szabo. Highly recommend that one. In fact, I should probably do a reboot of that one sometime soon. For anybody who's new to the show, if you haven't listened to that one, that's such a powerful concept that is super critical to understand. And it's one of the most fascinating rabbit holes, like, to think about money that way. So highly, highly recommend. I'll have that episode in the show notes. But the main idea here is that we need to stop thinking of the blockchain as, or at least we need to attack the idea. We need to make sure that there is always resistance to the idea that the blockchain is some magic weapon, that it's a magic wand that will just produce things if we just spit it out. Like you know, we'll just spin up a blockchain, and then now we have all of the security and immutability of Bitcoin just because we use a blockchain. And that is simply not true. It's a system, and the blockchain is a part of the input of that system, which the assurances of that system rely upon. So the more we waste the space on the blockchain, the more data we cram that blockchain full of, the more we then have to process to continue giving the security assurances of the Bitcoin system. The more we have to shove through this machine, the more we have to process, the more we have to sort in order to produce the same result. It's a sort of map for us all to find the same truth about value in the economy. It is not made better by making the map bigger or more complicated. We want it to be smaller and as direct as possible, that allows it to do the job, that allows it to reach for everyone to get to the destination and still make use of it. All right, I'm good there. I think I got everything off my chest. I just love, this was a really good thread that I saved. It's a year old now. Like I said, so it's an old conversation, but it's still just such a good idea. And I think everybody had good points here. I think Eric Wall made a pretty fun a jab back. Minnie Rosenfeld had a really good point. I think Justin Moon really kind of dropped it as succinctly as possible, is that it is a liability that we tolerate, not a virtue to extol. Or that we extol. And that's kind of the key takeaway here, is that the blockchain is not desirable in and of itself. It is part of a process to get a result. So we should treat it as carefully as possible, and we should produce as little waste into it as possible. But I am curious what you guys think. So I hope you guys enjoyed the thread and that little thought experiment on an analogy for what the blockchain is in relation to Bitcoin. Let me know, do you guys think it's exhaust? Do you think it's toxic waste? I mean, certainly if we could get rid of it entirely, that would be beneficial. If we could somehow still come to consensus and still have that final state and the security and the irreversibility of the current state of ownership of all Bitcoin, then, and we could get rid of the blockchain, well, then that would be great. We would want that. But obviously, that doesn't exist for the same reason in the analogy that, oh, if we could get rid of the plane and we could just teleport people from point A to point B, well, then that would be great. But obviously, we can't do that. So what analogy do you think works the best? Is it exhaust? Is it waste? Is it the infrastructure? Is it just a tool? Drop me a line on Twitter. Let me know. I'd love to hear your comments. If you think this is a total bullshit thread, or if you thought it was really useful, because I really enjoyed this thought experiment. I think it does shed some light, whether or not you agree with it completely or not. So anyway, I'll link to the thread so that you can find it. Again, it's from January of last year. And I'll also link to the one that got hidden by Minnie Rosenfeld. And what was the other one? Eric Walls is like right at the top, so I won't need to link to that one. You'll see that right at the beginning. I will link to Adam Back's because that one's also a little bit difficult to find. So if anybody wants to drop some likes or retweet this super old thread, that's how you do it. Go check out the show notes. And thank you guys for listening. I just want to say, before we close today out, thanks to all of my patrons. Again, you guys are the reason this thing stays alive right now. If anybody is interested in sponsoring the show and has a, you know, Bitcoin only preferably company, but like a serious project that they want to get out to the audience, I'd love to start a conversation. So hit me up at sponsor@thecryptoeconomy.com. And if anyone else wants to support the show and, you know, doesn't want to become a sponsor, you can do so at patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy, or of course donate with the Tippin bot on Twitter, or go to thecryptoeconomy.com, where I've got a couple of options up there. Thank you so much. I want to keep this project, the Bitcoin Audible project, alive for as long as humanly possible, and it is with your help that I can do that. So thank you all for listening. Don't forget to share this out with everyone you know in the Bitcoin space. I am Guy Swan, the guy who's read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And I'll catch you next time on The Crypto Economy. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.